Hello and welcome back. My name is Luke and you're listening to another episode of the Next Stage Podcast. We are very much at the end of the beginning for self-driving vehicles, says Gavin Jackson, CEO of autonomous vehicle software company Oxbotica. What does he mean by this? Well, Gavin thinks that an autonomous future is on the horizon, but it won't happen exactly as we imagined. Rather than single occupancy robo-taxis zipping around cities, what will be mainstream first are self-driving industrial vehicles working in mining, construction, energy plants, and so on. Keep listening to hear more about this and how Oxbotica is aiming to be an operating system for all autonomous vehicles working across all use cases, from urban shuttles and self-driving trucks to off-road delivery pods and more.
So, Gavin,
yeah.
You know, we're going to talk about where we are with autonomous vehicles today. And earlier today, I heard on the stage, we heard that autonomous vehicle trucks might not be here for 10 years. And this panel, the whole topic of this panel, you know, poses the question, are we headed towards a self-driving future? And when we get there, what will it look like?
Yeah.
I think you're going to take a very different view.
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, firstly, you know, it's really not lost on me that we're at an event called Collision, and we're talking about self-driving vehicles. The irony of that is somehow not lost on me. But anyway, I think that we are very much at the end of the beginning, probably, for self-driving vehicles. And I think that there are many, many applications, actually, of self-driving vehicles that are useful today, right? So I think that when you talk about self-driving vehicles, the first kind of image you have in your mind is, you know, either the trucking sort of image, which is coming, you know, over the next couple of years, we think, in production. Or you might think about sort of single occupancy robo-taxis in cities and things. And we think that sort of use case is, at scale, just sort of forever away.
Right.
In terms of that sort of, you know, that broad application for robo-taxis. So there's many, many more applications for production of self-driving vehicles right now.
So maybe set that stage for us. I didn't mean to make a stage pun. Set the stage for us.
Yeah.
Where are we now then with the commercialization of autonomous vehicles?
Yeah. So I think it really depends on the application. So again, so when you think about autonomy and you think about self-driving, you have to start thinking about, you know, who's going to stand to benefit from self-driving? You know, what industries are going to accrete the most value from self-driving? And I can tell you that it's not the single occupancy sort of journeys that you have in cities. That's not where the benefit for humans and society and for the planet are. It's just not there. Whereas in industrial settings today, like in heavy industry, like in mining or in construction or in energy plants or in factories and right across the board in industrial settings, the value chain for autonomy changes the game completely. It completely changes the safety footprint for those industries. It completely changes the economics for those industries. And perhaps most importantly today, it completely changes the carbon footprint for those industries.
Mm.
So today, in those industries, in industrial off public highway settings, autonomy is valuable today. But even then, when you switch to on-road applications, it's then just a question again about, well, how is autonomy really going to help?
Mm.
You know, what problem are we trying to solve with autonomy other than the fact that it's cool, right, to be in self-driving Tony Stark sort of like robots?
Yeah.
But actually, it's really, again, it's in areas where you can change the economics and the safety and the sustainability of those industries, like in trucking, you know, like in last mile goods delivery, you know, like in shared occupancy, sort of slower speed electric autonomous vehicles in urban cities. Again, that's going to change the game. You know, having many more sort of single occupancy robo-taxis in dense cities is not going to help, right?
Yeah.
But leveraging existing infrastructure and leveraging robo-shuttles in the way that we do, I think is going to change the game. And these things are all coming over the next couple of years.
Right. Couple years.
Next couple of years for some, yes.
For some. And now I want to talk about more of what you do at Oxbotica, because you guys work with a variety of different autonomous vehicles.
Yeah.
But one thing I do want to touch upon first is, I think when we talk about AVs, we do hear a lot about trucking, mm-hmm. that kind of commercialization and ahead of that. Why do you feel like that becomes such a popular point for a lot of companies? You know, you have the Gaddix of the world, or even Tesla looking at it, or here in Toronto you have Raquel Erdison's Wobby, right?
Yeah.
A lot of focus right now on trucks. Why does that feel like a big focus for you? And then let's dive into the other stuff that you're working on.
Yeah, so I think, you know, market entry, I think, is a really important and really interesting topic in the area of self-driving because, you know, market entry is indexed on things like the things I've mentioned already, like the value chain. Is it actually valuable to economy and people and planet and everything else? Is it valuable? And then is it near term from the perspectives of, you know, regulation and from the perspectives of safety assurance and things like this? And so, you know, from a complexity perspective, the actual technical challenge that we're trying to solve with autonomy, general autonomy, is that we're trying to take it from, I think, the original dream of it being sort of everywhere autonomy and the infinite sets of, you know, scenarios you'll have to kind of figure out as you go and, you know, the sort of random journeys that you might take. And we're trying to narrow all of that down to a somewhere autonomy. Mm. Like, where can we get value from that today? And how can we accelerate the time to commercialization? And trucking and last mile delivery and off public highway industrial settings, you know, these are all areas that we think can benefit from autonomy now.
Right.
You know, and so that's why I think there's been a fixation. But quite apart from that, back to that original comment that I made about, is it valuable? Well, we know it's valuable today because there's a general shortage of skills and a general shortage of, you know, human capital, right, that can do the jobs of a just-in-time, just-enough supply chain that we've all, as consumers, become accustomed to.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So let's talk about other than trucks, right? Because I think one thing that really interests me about what you're doing at Oxbotica is you have autonomous vehicles on solar and wind farms and in all sorts of areas. So what are some of those other use cases where you're actually, maybe we're not seeing, you know, fully level 4 autonomous vehicles, level 5 autonomous vehicles on public roads yet, but you are operating in different fields. So talk to me more about how Oxbotica got into that variety and what those different use cases are.
Absolutely. So we took a very, right from the origins of the company, and we were founded in 2014, from the origins of the company, we actually thought that autonomy was a general robotics problem, not an overfit to a place problem. So the original vision for our company was X to infinity, P to infinity, like all vehicles, all places, a general robotics problem that we're trying to solve, just with that is then composable in our architecture to solve for, you know, some of the nuances that you might see, you know, on a public road where there are road signs and there are, you know, markings and there are rules, you know, versus a mine or an underground mine where there's no sky to get a signal from, right? So you have to architect for every sort of scenario. And that's really the vision from the very beginning of the company, is we architected from that. So that what that means is we now have our autonomy software as like an operating system, if you will, that is driving, you know, 600-ton mining trucks to, you know, small delivery pods to shared mobility robo shuttles in cities to, you know, to you know, on-road trucks in the traditional sense. So right across all of those different vectors, we have customers and experience in lighting up and unleashing the value of autonomy to each of those different areas. And what that means in the end is that we can then service all transportation that exists in the world. That's what we're trying to do. You can imagine, if you try and think about in your mind's eye, imagine if Microsoft, right, when they were building Windows for the very first time, you can imagine that they said, I've got this really good technology platform, but it only works on a Dell PC, and it only works for booking applications in a hair salon. Right, I'm making it up, but you see what I mean? Like a very narrow set of use cases.
Yeah.
Imagine that was the case. You just wouldn't have unleashed the value that Microsoft or Google Android or Amazon Web Services or whatever it is that they might have had. So we've taken that approach to be horizontal and that we lift industries by driving all vehicles, you know, X to infinity in all places, P to infinity. Right. And that's how we differ from everybody else.
Now, you're taking a very optimistic view, right, on where autonomous vehicles kind of are and then the use cases you already are doing. But there are a lot of challenges that still remain. Regulation, consumer buy-in, right? Yeah. All sorts of stuff. So what are the main challenges that you're facing at Oxbotica and you feel like the AV industry on large is facing right now?
So there's certainly, I think, the longest poles in the tent still are P particularly for on public highways, on public roads for autonomy, is still regulation and is still the safety assurance challenge. That, and in the automotive space, they refer to that as verification and validation. But the way in which, you know, the world of autonomy and self-driving cars in particular, the way in which they've been trying to solve that up until this point is to find a place, let's call it San Francisco, and to drive many, many millions of miles doing ordinary things, waiting and hoping that you'll see extraordinary things along the way.
Mm.
Because it's only when you see and you can deal with extraordinary things that you can give confidence and assurance to those that are insuring or indeed regulating the market.
Right.
And so we think that it's the craziest thing in the world to try and validate and verify self-driving systems by driving around.
Mm.
It's crazy.
Mm.
Because you're rate limited by A, the number of physical miles you can do, but you're also specifically trying not to find hard things, right? You don't want to kill people. It's a pretty big deal, right? So what we're trying to do is we're taking it from the everywhere autonomy challenge to this somewhere autonomy challenge.
Right.
We're recreating that somewhere in the metaverse. And then what we've built is some, you know, really powerful adversarial AIs that take the place, that take the vehicle that's being tested and the software release that's being tested. And these adversarial AIs are giving that AV system a really hard time.
Right.
So they're absolutely looking out for what are the nightmare situations in this refinery? What are the nightmare situations in this city? You know, what are the nightmare situations, you know, in this solar farm? You know, what are the things we absolutely need to assuredly say that we are safe or not safe at any given time?
Right.
And by doing that in the metaverse, we can then drive millions of miles, discover and actively seek out the toughest things to find, and then we can smooth those things over in the real world with the vehicles that we take to market.
Right. And safety is big, and safety is important, and that needs to be there, that comfortability level. But then there are also challenges with regulation or insurance, different varieties of people. And, you know, I wonder, what does the industry need to do to make sure that you're able to get, so, you know, I think in Ontario, for example, Ontario does attract a lot of autonomous vehicles.
Yes.
You guys, even though you're from the UK, you have a location here in Toronto, because there's such a big AI community and a lot of, you can test, you know, certain things on public roads here in Ontario, and in certain regions you can't. So what needs to happen in the industry to get, you know, regulators, insurers, all sorts of different people, not just consumers understanding safety, how do you get everyone else on board?
Do you know, I think that the starting point that we have at this point is we're in a high class, we have a high class problem in so many different ways, in that there's not a regulator on the planet today that I speak to that doesn't think that this is going to be a thing, that doesn't think that the value of self-driving vehicles across many different industries is going to change the game. And so all of them are deeply motivated to lean in and learn and help. But the challenge is that there's different speeds to progress, and different strategies, if you will, that nations are taking. So, what I observe, for example, in the United States, is that you tend to test first and you innovate first, and then regulations and safety sort of catch up. And in parts of Europe and Asia, they tend to be highly regulated, and then you test second. And so, what you're trying to do is to be super transparent with all the main actors that define the standards, that define the legislation, that ensure, you know, the problem of self-driving, ensure all of that, and you bring them in behind the curtain to show them how your system works, how you run safety trials, you know, how you operate, and how you sort of, you know, one of our leadership principles as a company is to be indistinguishable from perfect on the subject of safety.
So, easy, right? Perfect is easy to achieve.
Indistinguishable from perfect.
Yeah.
We strive to be that way. Mm. And it's to really kind of show the regulators how we do that. And I'll give you a concrete example of that. So just four weeks ago, we were Europe's first and only self-driving company to have zero occupancy, new type electric vehicle. And if you're in the automotive world, you'll understand what I mean by type approval, where it doesn't have a steering wheel. You can't tick the box that says, does it have a steering wheel and seatbelts? It doesn't have any of those things. And so we did those trials, and we did it on the public road, mixing with other traffic users.
Yeah.
But we just brought the insurance companies, and we brought the governments that were active in that space. We bought the standards bearers. You know, we bought all the people that care about that, the vehicle standards agencies. We bought them behind the curtain. We prepared well with them. We helped to teach. And then that really kind of set the bar for what's coming next.
Right. And you talked about, you know, almost a North American view of innovate first, regulate after, where it's a little bit different in Europe. What do you think is a better approach?
I think it's always going to be a balance of the two. Mm. Because I think that always, you know, innovation is going to run faster than your ability to keep up with regulations, as it should be. In the same way that, you know, software is innovating faster than atoms do. So you can expect as well there's another rate limiter where the self-driving software is part of the equation, but the vehicles and their capability to, if you like, host that self-driving software is a little slower than the software makers because it's just rate limited in that way.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing really for regulation and law and as these things come to bear. So you need to be right on the edge of what is possible, but bring the regulators always with you on the journey and not think about that second. I think if you can do that, then you'll build, you know, high bar of standards, which is absolutely necessary. Nobody wants to cut corners here, but to make sure that you're building legislation that allows all industries and all people to benefit from self-driving technologies. And I think that genuinely, it will change the world if we do it the right way.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, we're getting close to the end, so I'll ask you one last question. Where do you see then autonomous vehicles in the next 2, 5, 10 years? Where do you see it?
So the good news about all of this is, as I mentioned earlier on, there's market entry points that are absolutely dovetailed with the expectations on things like regulation and the timing of regulations, and if you like, the autonomous license to drive, right? Mm. And already today, and moving into 2023, most of the off public highway use cases for autonomy and where industries are going to get, you know, huge benefit already is starting right now. Mm. So I would say over the next 12 months, you're going to start to see more fleets of vehicles doing more things in industry, augmenting human-driven fleets, but doing jobs that where there might be a scarcity or perhaps even a human danger, you know, like in the areas of mining and some construction areas as well. So you're going to start to see all of that. On public highway, there's a general consensus that we have, and we work with the United Nations, we work with other nations of the world and so on. There's general consensus that in limited, what's referred to as ODDs, is the operating design domain. So in limited sort of scenarios in 2024, you'll start to see more autonomous road-going vehicles doing more jobs for the general public and for industry as well. Really from 2024 going into let's say the following 3 years, my expectation is that you'll just expand the complexity of the ODD, those designs, the domains that we're operating in. You'll start to get more normalized activity, particularly again in vehicles that do jobs rather than just necessarily vehicles that move people.
Right.
You know, vehicles that do jobs that's part of the supply chain and the value chain. There'll be a lot of momentum there. And then really in that 2024 to 2027 timeframe, I absolutely expect that the congested cities of the world will start to change legislation, not for autonomy, but for single occupancy passenger cars.
Right.
And I think single occupancy passenger cars in cities will start to reduce. And I think they'll be replaced by, you know, multi-occupancy, shared mobility, self-driving electric vehicles.
Okay, awesome. Well, there you go. Thank you so much, Gavin. This
Pleasure.
Has been great. Yeah,
thank you.
Enjoyed it.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. So until next week, see you then.